Hi, listeners, and welcome to the True Crime Weekly podcast, a podcast that is based in San Diego and hosted by me, Alina Trujillo, and my producer, Jose Fernandez. This is a podcast where I will be bringing you stories of murders, infamous cases, and unsolved mysteries. Bobbi Jo Stinnett was 23 years old when she and her husband were expecting their first child. Unfortunately, Bobbi Jo wouldn't live to give birth. On December 16, 2004, Bobbi Jo invited 36-year-old Lisa Marie Montgomery into her home, where Lisa would then strangle Bobbi Jo and steal her unborn child from the womb. This is the story of the murder of Bobbi Jo Stinnett. Bobbi Jo Stinnett was 8 months pregnant and expecting to be a first-time mother. Bobbi Jo and her husband, Seb, ran a business breeding dogs in their home in Missouri. Bobbi Jo also worked at a local manufacturing plant in Maryville, but the couple needed all the money that they could get with a new baby coming along. So baby Jo had spent years watching her dogs give birth to litters of puppies, and she's seen friends and family members give birth to beautiful children. So finally, after a year of marriage, it was her turn. Her excitement was almost impossible to contain. Even at 8 months, when her pregnancy was beginning to take a toll, Bobbi Jo was happily chatting about her soon-to-arrive baby. One place where she shared her excitement was on an online chat room, and the name of that chat room was Ratter Chatter. The chat room was a place where like-minded people could talk about rat terriers. So I had to look it up because I wasn't sure what a rat terrier was. But to me, it looked like the dog from the movie The Mask.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, it looked just like that.
That's what they were.
I know. So, but do you remember chat rooms? Like,
yeah, like that was a big thing back.
Yeah, like AOL.
I feel like when we were kids.
Right. And I remember chat rooms was definitely a thing too. And I just remember thinking it was like so awkward. Like, I didn't know exactly what it was other than you join a chat room of like a group of something that you had in common, right?
Yeah.
And then you just chatted with random people. But for me, that was always so weird. Like, I don't know. Like, what would I look for? Like, I was always into, like, murder and serial killers. Like, what am I looking for? Like, I don't want to be talking to those people. Like, an actual serial killer? No, thanks. My dad was my chat room. That's all I have to say. I had fun terrorizing him. I don't have to terrorize strangers with it. But I'm not sure. Were you a part of one?
Chat rooms? No. I mean, I think I had friends that did, but I never was into that.
Yeah, I think I had friends too. I just remember when it first was a thing, like I said, my dad just kind of always told me to never join a chat room. I wasn't allowed to chat with people I didn't know.
That was always like the warning because you didn't know who you were talking to.
No, it's true. So I know what you mean. That's totally true. And that's true even to this story. Okay, so while chatting online, Bobbi Jo met Lisa Montgomery. However, Lisa told Bobbi Jo that her name was Darlene Fisher. So see how it's, people can just obviously
just like another personality, another alias.
Right. So Lisa Montgomery was from Kansas, and the two of them had plenty in common. Not only did they share a love for rat terriers, but they were both also pregnant. As Bobbi Jo talked about her pregnancy, Lisa, aka Darlene, also told Bobbi that she too was expecting a child. But to be honest, this was not the case.
Oh no.
Lisa, aka Darlene, was actually not pregnant. Okay, so let me tell you about Lisa Montgomery and her upbringing, okay? Lisa's mother was Judy Shaughnessy, and by the time that Judy gave birth to Lisa in 1968, Judy was 20 years old. So Judy was a young mom, and it is said that Judy drank heavily while she was pregnant with Lisa.
Oh man, while she was pregnant?
Yes. So Lisa's father, John Patterson, was 25 years old and was in the military. Lisa's father was also an alcoholic.
Oh, man, it's a bad situation.
Mm-hmm. So he had a daughter from a previous relationship named Diane, who was 4 years older than Lisa. And Judy was cruel and violent to both Lisa and Diane. According to a sworn statement from John, who reported feeling ashamed that he didn't step in to stop the abuse, it is said that Lisa's first words as a toddler were, "Don't spank me."
Oh, that's awful.
Mm-hmm.
That's so sad.
Yeah. So Diane was the eldest of the two, and she suffered the worst of the violence, okay? So I read an article in the HuffPost where Diane had done an interview with them, and she described the abuse that her and Lisa had endured as children. The article said that Judy would beat Diane with whatever was in her hand, whether it was a belt or a broom. And Diane also said that Judy liked to take her finger and poke her as hard as she could in her chest over and over in the same spot.
Oh, man, how annoying.
Right? Okay, but the physical abuse wasn't the only thing that the girls endured. So Judy would also abuse them psychologically as well. So in that article that I read, Diane said that Judy had the ability to find what hurt you the most and use that against you. So Judy knew that Diane was sensitive about abandonment due to her severed relationship with her birth mother. So she would strip Diane naked, push her out the front door, pretending that she was being kicked out. Then she would tell Diane to leave and that she couldn't take anything with her because everything was stuff that she bought herself.
My God, that's so messed up.
Mm-hmm. I know, isn't it? So Lisa and Diane's father, John, was often away from the house for long periods of time.
He's in the military. Yeah.
Right. So Judy would have other men over, okay? And often they'd physically fight, and Diane would try to protect Lisa from the chaos. And some nights, Judy would leave them in the house with a male babysitter. So at around the age of 8, Diane said that a man began raping her in the bedroom she shared with Lisa. And around this time, Judy and John separated and Diane was removed from the house by Child Protective Services. And in that article that I read, Diane said that on her way out the door, Judy leaned over and told her it was all her fault she was being taken away.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So Diane said that even though she was only 8 years old, she recalled being worried about what would happen to her sister Lisa without her there.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Like, why did she get taken away and not the other?
Right. I'm not sure why they only took Diane and not Lisa, but Diane did say in an interview that, and I quote, "When they came to get me, I thought they were coming to take all of us. I thought they knew what was going on," she said. As the car drove further and further away, Diane began to vomit. "I was thinking, she's still back there, and they're taking me away from her." Diane didn't see Lisa again until Lisa's trial 34 years later.
No way.
Yeah. So a few years had passed, and Judy had remarried a man named Jack Kleiner, and the couple had 3 children together. So Jack beat the kids and his wife regularly. His physical abuse of the children had sexual undercurrents, okay? Mm-hmm. So he would make the girls strip naked before whipping them. Then Jack moved the family around often, and by the time Lisa was a teenager, she had moved approximately 16 times.
Wow.
So Jack began molesting Lisa, but Jack didn't stop there. Not only did he molest her, Jack was friends with a plumber and electrician. So when Jack needed something fixed in the house, as payment to his friends, he would let them rape Lisa.
Oh my God. I'm like speechless in all of this.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely horrible. So this would go on for as long as Judy and Jack were married. Then during the divorce proceedings, Judy admitted to the court that she had walked in on her husband raping Lisa. And while the court reprimanded Judy for her not reporting this to authorities, the court also failed to report it. And Jack Kleiner was never charged.
You're kidding.
No. So not only did the mom walk in, she knew about it, didn't do anything about it, but then she admitted to that in court, and the court just failed to report it as well.
That's unbelievable.
I know. It's absolutely horrible. So the reason I'm letting you know about Lisa's tragic upbringing is because this was a big part of her trial. And I'm not trying to make you feel bad for someone that took someone else's life. I know that, you know, a lot of people have gone through similar situations and they didn't grow up killing anybody.
Right.
But I just want to give you the facts of her upbringing and what got her to that place where maybe she felt like this was her only choice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, makes sense.
Hey, True Crime Weekly podcast listeners. I have a new debut detective and crime novel that I think you'll love. Deliberate Duplicity by David Rolfing explores the twisted, vengeful mind of a serial killer and follows dedicated detective Sasha Frank, who is hell-bent on solving the mystery behind this string of gruesome crimes. One by one, dead bodies are being found at different points along the Constitution Trail, where abandoned railroad tracks once ran through the Twin Cities of Bloomington, Normal, Illinois. The work of a calculating, methodical killer poses each body on the ground with the eyes manipulated so they remain wide open. A complicated web of clues leaves Sasha and his team with more questions than answers. Would Sasha be able to solve the mystery before time runs out and bring justice to all who are affected? Deliberate Duplicity is published by River Grove Books and is available everywhere books are sold on January 5th, 2021. Pre-order online now from your favorite book retailer or visit deliberateduplicity.com to learn more. Okay, so now that I've given you that background on Lisa's upbringing, let me take you back to the day of the murder. So Lisa had been chatting with Bobby Joe about both of them being pregnant and about rat terriers. So Bobby Joe's business, Happy Heaven Rat Terriers, found homes for dogs every week and plenty of people came and went. So that's why on December 16th, 2004, Bobby Joe happily opened the door and welcomed in stranger Darlene, aka Lisa, into her home after Darlene had expressed interest in buying one of her puppies. Mm-hmm. So on December 16, 2004, she waited for Darlene to come look at her puppies. Not knowing that as she waited for Darlene to show up, Lisa was back home researching online how to perform a C-section.
Are you kidding?
Mm-mm.
Oh, no.
So Bobby Joe hears a knock on the door and she opens the door, letting the woman she knew as Darlene into her home. The two of them were alone in the home, and as Bobby Joe turned to guide Darlene through the house and towards the dogs, she looked away, and that's when Lisa saw her opportunity. As Bobby Joe has her back turned to Lisa, Lisa grabs a pink neon rope, and she wraps it around Bobby Joe's neck, and she begins to squeeze. Bobby Joe is not only fighting for her life, but she is also fighting for her unborn child's life. But no matter how hard Bobby Joe fights, she isn't able to break free from Lisa. As Bobby Joe is laying on the floor dead, Lisa then begins to perform surgery on Bobby Joe to remove her unborn child. Lisa reaches for a knife and begins to slice open Bobby Joe's stomach. Lisa starts to cut deeper and deeper until she pierces the womb. Blood seeped out of Bobby Joe's wounds. Lisa felt her hands become slippery, but as she kept on cutting with the knife, finally Lisa was able to reach the baby, cutting away at Bobby Joe's flesh and slicing the umbilical cord. Lisa was finally able to cut the baby free.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, what would make a person even think about doing that?
Well, we'll get there. But wait. The baby is alive. And is soaked in blood, Lisa then held the baby close to her and she felt the baby's heartbeat. Then, Lisa left, abandoning Bobby Joe in a pool of her own blood. Bobby Joe's mother discovered her daughter in a pool of blood and she described it as looking like Bobby Joe's stomach had exploded.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's horrible. Her mother immediately called 911, and attempts by paramedics to revive Bobby Joe were unsuccessful, and she was pronounced dead at St. Francis Hospital in Maryville, Missouri. And okay, so I know what you're thinking. How is Lisa going to explain this new baby to her husband, okay?
I didn't even get there, honestly. I'm still trying to think of all of what you just told me, which is just so incredibly tragic. And
I know, it's horrible. Well, okay. So Lisa had been lying to her husband and everyone else around her by telling them that she was pregnant.
Really? So yeah. she was already like planning on doing
this. She was planning this for a while. So Lisa had four children from past marriages, but this was her and her husband's first child. Okay. So her husband at the time believed the lie, as Lisa would often show her husband ultrasound pictures. But how did she get the ultrasound pictures when Lisa wasn't pregnant, right?
Yeah.
She would look up online ultrasound pictures, print them, and pass them as her own. So that's what she was showing the husband.
And how, like, how's she showing or not showing?
She's not showing. And that was one of the things. So I saw a documentary on the ID channel, and they said that a lot of people did question her because she wasn't showing. But she would get so defensive and mad that she would take out, she would always carry those ultrasound pictures. So when somebody would question her, she would bust them out. Like, you want to question me? Like, how would I have an ultrasound picture?
Because you printed it online?
Right.
And it's on ultrasound paper?
Yeah. So as Lisa is speeding home with the baby in her arms, she was delighted. When Lisa reached Topeka, Kansas, she called Kevin, her husband. And Lisa told him she'd given birth while out in Topeka, and she'd gone into labor prematurely. Now that she's given birth to a beautiful baby girl, she'd be home right away. All Kevin had to do was come pick her up because, of course, after giving birth, she was in no condition to drive.
Well, yeah, naturally. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, meanwhile, back in Skidmore, Missouri, police realized that a pregnant woman had been killed, but her unborn baby was missing. And immediately they put out an alert, and worried that the baby had taken across state lines, they contacted the FBI for help. So police have one suspect, and that's the person who made the appointment to buy a puppy, Darlene Fisher. And even though Lisa had given a false name, the authorities still had access to Bobby Joe's computers. So they called in specialists, and acting on a tip from a person who'd seen Bobby Joe's conversation on the Terrier chat room, they found the account of the person visiting the house. So they tracked that person's IP address, linking it to a phone number and an address.
Really?
Yeah. So that alerted them to Kevin Montgomery. That's Lisa's husband.
Oh, wow.
So less than a day after the murder, the police roll up outside the Montgomery's household, okay? And they found Lisa inside, clutching at the one-day-old baby, surrounded by her puzzled but delighted family. Like, just picture that. She's just sitting there clutching this day-old baby, looking all happy, surrounded by the rest of her family.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of her family is, like, happy looking at the baby, and then, like, bam, police walk in. They're like, wait, what's going on? So in a matter of minutes, the Montgomery family was changed forever. Lisa was arrested and the baby was still alive. And the baby, get this, was actually returned to Seb Stinnett, which was Bobby Joe's husband.
Oh, okay.
So obviously people were shocked. The family of Bobby Joe were distraught, but they were relieved to get the baby back. There is some good news to this. The baby survived this whole ordeal.
Which is unbelievable.
Yeah. So the Montgomery family was terrified to find out what Lisa had done. And communities in Missouri and Kansas were appalled. And the media covered the murder relentlessly. And during trial, Lisa's upbringing was revealed. Mm-hmm. So Lisa had been raised, like how I said, in an abusive household. And for years, her stepfather had been secretly raping her. So the abuse turned Lisa to alcohol, and when Lisa's mother found out what had been happening, she actually threatened Lisa with a gun. So Lisa tried to escape the situation when she was 18 years old. Her only plan was to get married, but her marriage and the following marriage resulted in even more abuse. Man. And after she had four children, Lisa went through the process of tubal ligation. Pretty much what that means is that her fallopian tubes were burnt, so she was sterile.
Wow.
But she'd claimed to be pregnant on several occasions, so this wasn't the first time that she had attempted this lie.
But her husband didn't know, like, that she had that done?
No. So Lisa's criminal offense established under the Federal Kidnapping Act intended to make it easier for federal authorities to respond to kidnappings once they cross state lines. She was tried and convicted for kidnapping resulting in death. In Title 18, United States Code 1201, U.S. Attorney Todd Graves stated that federal jurisdiction is established when a person dies as a result of a kidnapping. Violations of Title 18 U.S.C. 1201 may result in capital punishment and or any sentence up to life imprisonment. At a pretrial hearing, Neuropsychologists testified that head injuries, which she had suffered some years before, could have damaged the part of the brain which controls aggression. So during her trial in federal court, her defense attorneys asserted that she suffered from pseudocyesis, which is a mental condition that causes women to falsely believe that they are pregnant and exhibit outward signs of pregnancy.
I don't know. I mean, but it's not like she thought she was pregnant. She knew she wasn't pregnant and she had to get a baby.
Like, she lied about it. I know.
Yeah, so okay. That doesn't really make sense,
right? So I get that. So noted neuroscientist V.S. Ramachandran gave expert testimony that Lisa suffered from severe pseudocyesis delusion. So according to the neuroscientist, Lisa's childhood sexual abuse and post-traumatic stress disorder predisposed her to pseudocyesis. So the neuroscientist expert testified that Lisa's stories about her actions fluctuated because her delusional state fluctuated. This same expert stated that Lisa was suffering from severe mental disease or defect when she committed the crime and that she was unable to appreciate the nature and quality of her acts. So federal prosecutor Roseanne Ketchmark characterized the expert's theory linking the murder/kidnapping to pseudocyesis as voodoo science.
Really?
Yeah. So forensic psychiatrist Park Dietz testified for the prosecution, and Park Dietz had worked with prosecutors on other high-profile cases, including those of serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer and the Unabomber, as well as two women, Andrea Yates and Susan Smith, who had killed their own children. Yates was found not guilty by reason of insanity. So Park Dietz testified that Lisa did not suffer from pseudocyesis and dismissed the expert's theory as outrageous. So on October 22nd, 2007, jurors found Lisa Montgomery guilty of murder. And on October 26th, the jury recommended a death sentence.
I mean, you may not know this, but let's say that she did have a mental issue.
Mm-hmm.
Then what? She would go to like get treated for that?
No, or would so she, then, would so yeah, she would get treated. She would get treated. She would still get life in prison without the possibility of parole. But they're saying they wanted a death sentence. And that's so why they're saying. She would
have gone out of the death
sentence. Right. She would have gone out of that. So Lisa Montgomery was originally scheduled to be executed last month. So last December.
Oh, just now.
Yes. But that was postponed in January when her attorneys actually contracted COVID-19. After visiting her in prison, and a federal judge granted them more time to file a petition for clemency. So last week, the judge ruled that the execution should be delayed again, saying that the Bureau of Prisons couldn't set a new date while the case was on hold.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
So because of COVID, now it got extended
further. Yes. But on Friday, a three-judge panel for the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit ruled that the execution can proceed.
Really?
So now, 52-year-old Lisa Montgomery will become, on January 12th, the first female federal inmate to be executed in nearly 70 years.
Really?
Yeah. So due to her mental illness and trauma, her attorneys plan to ask for full circuit court to reconsider the ruling. And Lisa's attorney, Megan Virgo, gave the following statement, and I quote, "Given everything we know about Lisa Montgomery's mental illness, her lifetime of horrific torture and trauma, and the many people in positions of authority who could have intervened to save her, but never did, there can be no principled reason to carry out her execution," end quote. So Megan Virgo also asked President Trump to commute her sentence to life without possibility of release. If Lisa Montgomery's execution is carried out, it would be one of the last federal executions to take place for the foreseeable future, as President-elect Joe Biden, who will take office about a week after the execution, has said he wants to eliminate federal death penalty.
Wow, this is happening right now.
Yes. So the murder happened in 2004, and all this came about right because of COVID-19, and then because Trump is coming out of office and Joe Biden's coming in. So that's what sparked this whole case to pick back up.
That's great. So this is an error on the 11th,
mm-hmm.
we'll know.
And the 12th, the 11th, and the 12th, she's supposed to be executed.
Wow. I don't know. I mean, everything about this story was tragic. The upbringing, everything. Is just
the upbringing, and it's
horrible.
Right. And when I was doing my research, it was so hard because I kept on catching myself feeling so sorry for Lisa. But then I kept on telling myself, you know what? There are people out there that have gone through similar experiences and they don't grow up to kill somebody. But then there's also the whole, well, does she have a mental illness?
I mean, right? It's true. I mean, I guess like the, what do they say? Voodoo science? I don't really see it as voodoo science, right? I mean, there's a possibility that could be what led to her performing an act like that.
Right.
I mean, not everybody is gonna go and do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even cross people's minds in most situations. Right. So you'd hope that the reason why would be because of a potential mental illness.
Right. And, you know, even how they said it's like, unfortunately, authorities failed her from the very beginning.
Yeah.
You know,
why did she
back in
why wasn't she taken away? Like, right. I don't get that.
Like, why was she not taken away when Diane was taken away, her older sister? Why is it that when her mother, Judy, filed for divorce, she admitted that she was being raped and still nothing was done about it? I mean, it just seemed like, you know, the law just unfortunately failed her. But again, does that give her the right to take somebody else's life? No, it doesn't. You know, and the good thing about this story is that the baby survived. Bobby Joe's daughter is still alive.
Yeah.
You know, she survived. She doesn't have a mom, but she was brought up by her dad and the rest of her family.
Yeah. Can you imagine being the mom of Bobby Joe? Bobby Joe's
that
mom.
That must have been
walking into
horrifying
that?
To see. In the articles I read, she described it as, it looked like my daughter's stomach had exploded.
Yeah.
I mean, that's horrible.
Imagine. I mean, you're excited to have your granddaughter.
Your first.
Come to life. And
grandchild. Yeah.
You lose both of them at that point.
Right. I mean, luckily,
well, she was a day later. Recovered a day later.
Yeah,
but I'm talking
still,
about that specific moment right. in time, which you're thinking.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah. So I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. Like I said, so this episode is going to post on the 11th. She's supposed to be executed on the 12th. So I guess we'll wait and see. And hopefully we'll be able to provide an update, maybe via Instagram. If you want to look at pictures and want more information on the cases we cover, you can head over to truecrimeweeklypodcast.com. You can also follow us on Instagram at podcasttruecrimeweekly. And please don't forget to support the show by going to truecrimeweeklypodcast.com/support the show. And I would truly love it and appreciate it if you would leave a 5-star review and subscribe onto Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen. The only way that people find out about us is through subscribers and reviews. Thanks for listening.